The following podcast contains advertising. To access an ad-free version of the Lawfare podcast, become a material supporter of Lawfare at patreon.com/lawfare. That's patreon.com/lawfare. Also, check out Lawfare's other podcast offerings, Rational Security, Chatter, Lawfare No Bull, and The Aftermath.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Benjamin Wittes, and this is the Lawfare Podcast, special edition, August 11th, 2018. BuzzFeed News on Friday afternoon released a fascinating little story headlined, GOP operative made suspicious withdrawals during pursuit of Clinton emails, bylined by Anthony Cormier and Jason Leopold. The story is the latest in the yarn of Peter Smith, who Lawfare readers will remember from the reporting of Shane Harris back when he was at the Wall Street Journal, and on Lawfare itself, the firsthand account of one Matt Tate. The latest story reveals that BuzzFeed News has reviewed documents, quote, showing that FBI agents and congressional investigators have zeroed in on transactions Smith made right as his efforts to procure Clinton's emails heated up. Cormier and Leopold have cash withdrawals that appear to be wholly new, and they report that a bank has turned over documents showing, quote, 88 suspicious cash withdrawals totaling $140,000 between January 2016 and April 2017, including a $3,000 withdrawal 6 days after the election. The FBI suspects, they report, that Smith used some of the cash to fund his operation and paid hackers who provided him the emails. I talked to Anthony Cormier Friday afternoon and Friday evening to David Criss, with whom I chewed over the question of how this new reporting interacts with Mueller's conspiracy indictment related to Russian hacking from earlier this summer. It's the Lawfare Podcast, episode 337, BuzzFeed follows Peter Smith's money. Anthony, this is a complicated story, so why don't you start by walking us through what's new here and what you've built on prior reporting, both self-reporting by Matt Tate and journalistic reporting by Shane Harris when he was at the Wall Street Journal.
Right. I think it's important to note both of those individuals, right? You saw that Shane was one of the best reporters in the game right now, sort of broke through with a look at Peter Smith, a longtime GOP operator, kind of a nemesis to the Clinton family going back into the 90s, where during the summer of 2016, he puts together a team that is attempting to go on what he called the dark web to obtain Secretary Clinton's 33,000 missing emails. He's convinced that these emails have been obtained by hackers, some of whom he readily admits are either fronts for or backed by the Russian government. And he sets forth this plan around Labor Day. He enlists the help of computer experts, technicians, a Russian-speaking investigator. And one of the individuals he reaches out to is Matt Tate, a former information security analyst from Britain's spy agency, who does not want to get involved, according to his own reporting that you guys have run, doesn't want to get involved in this, but sort of keeps Peter on the line. and learns that, you know, he's got this effort, he's underway, he's possibly working with one of the top advisors at the time to the Clinton, excuse me, to the Trump administration, to the Trump campaign, Mike Flynn. And the effort fizzles, right? This effort to get these 33,000 emails by Peter Smith, this operator, it just doesn't go anywhere. But it doesn't stop there for both the special counsel's team and the counterintelligence agents who are looking at Russian influence in the United States. They, while Mr. Smith's story is certainly a bizarre one and quite intriguing, it sort of fades from public view. We've got enough red meat to chew on in the interim, except that the FBI hasn't let it go. And this incident, this episode is now, what we're being told is now a sort of very crucial one because they want to understand, the FBI and Mueller's team wants to understand whether or not, in fact, Mr. Smith paid anyone and whether or not Mr. Flynn, General Flynn, knew about these sort of cutouts, the people that Smith was interacting with. Our new reporting today shows that there were at least 88 suspicious cash transactions in Peter Smith's 9 bank accounts. And the FBI is paying particular attention to one that was made the day after he reveals his proposal to do this operation. This is in early September around Labor Day. Mr. Smith has opened a bank account for what he calls a vehicle, a company, an LLC, called KLS Research, that he plans to conduct this operation through. He opens a bank account for KLS Research, and he withdraws $9,500. He moves that money over to his personal bank account and takes out more than $4,900 in cash. He sends some other money to a different LLC and he pays an accountant. But this withdrawal of $9,500 and then the cashing of $4,900 is, we are told, and we have seen documents that say, a sort of very pivotal thing. They want to know, what did Peter Smith do with the $4,900 cash? At the moment, we don't know and our sources don't either, but it is, we're told, a sort of nexus for where they're looking. That's essentially part of their effort to follow the money. This is sort of a thing that my colleague Jason Leopold and I have been on all year. We've attempted to look at their money, so to speak.
So walk me through why this money train is important. We, on the one hand, you say, well, following the money is always important. But on the other hand, in this instance, there's this weird quality. Bob Mueller has come forward and said there was a conspiracy on the Russian side to hack Democratic emails and inject them into the campaign. And here we have an apparent plot to obtain emails for purposes of injecting them into the campaign that was kind of close to the Trump campaign. Exactly how close is a little bit unclear. And now you're reporting that it actually spent money or withdrew money and may have spent that money on paying hackers to obtain emails. So how should we understand this in relation to the indictment that Mueller issued only recently against GRU hackers for obtaining emails?
It seems to me that cutouts or intermediaries for Russian intelligence were probing the pliability of certain members of either the campaign or those in their ether for whether or not they could actually be useful to Russia's ultimate goal, which was to sort of meddle, right? I mean, I think that the fronts, the individuals that were speaking to Mr. Smith may have been, I don't have any reporting to support this, is me purely speculating, but they may have been testing how compliant these individuals may have been. And I think that's a point that not very many people understand at the moment, that we've seen this again and again with, for instance, the plan by Michael Cohen and Felix Sater to build a tower in Moscow, where we see former GRU officials sort of probing Michael and Felix to see how far they could get them. Could they bring them over to Russia? Could they get them to send them photographs of the president's passport? I think the same thing is happening here, where they appear to be testing out what they can do and how far they can get people to go. And in this instance, it appears that, you know, this money may have gone to a cutout or a front for the sort of GRU or the intelligence officials who, are now responsible, or at least according to Mueller, responsible for the interference. I think to a larger point, when it comes to money, I think there's a lot we don't know. And while Mueller has said it's very clear that this is directed by Russian intelligence, the hacking, the pulling of it, I think there will be a series of middlemen and women who were useful to this Russian campaign and expected to be paid for their work. And whether they were paid on the American side or the Russian side is unclear to me. But it is our understanding that people had to carry out certain actions and they expected to be paid for those actions. And the clearest example, while we have no indication at the moment that Maria Butina was at all involved in the sort of the 2016 election, it's now clear to me that she was an actor who was attempting to influence American politics, and she needed to get paid to do it. And I assume, well, she's always sort of dangerous, but I'm making an educated, halfway reported guess that there will be others who expected to be paid for the actions they took in 2016.
And you think this money that Peter Smith withdrew and paid to someone in expectation of getting Hillary Clinton's emails may be an example of that?
If the FBI, as our sources say, that's the theory they are working off of right now, but they have not sort of fully closed the loop. But yes, if it turns out to be that he indeed did pay an intermediary or a cutout, that yes, this is an example of individuals needing to get paid for their work.
Do you believe, is the working theory that you're working with here, that Peter Smith was talking to real hackers about real emails, or is this a situation where somebody who was politically enthusiastic about getting the Clintons got taken for a ride by people on the dark web? Do we have any further insight into that?
I don't have any further reporting, but my gut suggests to me that these emails, these 33,000 emails, which were, to be fair, they were deleted from her personal server, and the theory is that they must have been hacked before that. Now, Comey has left open the possibility that they had been hacked, but I have seen no evidence that these things actually exist on the dark web, in the ether. I think he honestly may have gotten taken for a ride. You'll recall, he never released them because he couldn't authenticate them. And this is a man who, if you go back to the 1990s, he spent tens of thousands of dollars to set up a fund for Arkansas State Troopers during the Troopergate scandal, right? He's trying to catch Bill Clinton in marital infidelity. He really has it out for the Clinton family. Had there been any sort of indication that the samples, so to speak, that he had received were legitimate, I have no doubt that he would have released them. At least his history suggests he would have. So it sort of suggests to me that somebody was either taking him for a ride, just goofing him for his money, or there was another issue at play Ms. Smith did indeed believe he was talking to individuals on the internet who were in some way connected to the Russian government. This is his own words from Shane Harris, the and some great reporting from the journal. So I don't think the emails exist. I do think either he got taken for a ride, but part of me also believes that they were probing, that there was someone potentially testing out the market, so to speak. Like, what can we get away with here, and how, you know, who should we use?
So, okay, so if these are not real emails, or we're assuming that they're not real emails, are we assuming that they are real Russian government operatives? Because one possibility is it's real government Russian operatives, but they're not. It's not really related to the hacking indictment, right, that the GRU, to the GRU hacking indictment that Mueller issued. It's just people probing Peter Smith and trying to, you know, get to the Trump people that way. Another possibility, of course, is that it is fake Russian agents peddling fake emails, right? Is your theory that these are real Russian agents peddling
fake emails? I can only go on what Mr. Smith, before his death, what he said. He believed that these were individuals were, in fact, either fronts for the Russian government or were in some way connected to the Russian government. He believed that these were real. This was a real operation by a foreign government, and that he was interacting with individuals who had some connection to a foreign government. I would hate to speculate beyond their, beyond the current sort of reporting. And like I always say, if you start guessing what Robert Mueller has, you're going to look like a fool. So I don't know. I can only go on, you know, Peter Smith believed that he was dealing with actual factual, you know, Russian intelligence linked hackers.
Finally, to what extent do we have any more insight into whether he was or was not meaningfully connected with the Trump campaign? He represented in this document that you describe, connections to a bunch of people. On the other hand, the Trump campaign says he was, you know, not part of us in any meaningful sense. And he did sort of say he was working independently. He was close to Flynn, who's now cooperating with Mueller. What do we know about to what extent this was the Trump campaign trying to get Clinton emails, and to what extent it was just some old Republican operative trying to get Clinton emails?
I think we should take Tate at his word, right? And Tate is saying that there were heavy implications that Mr. Flynn was involved in this. Now, they've denied it, I think, publicly. So has the White House. We have reporting that dovetails with this, right? So our sources say that intelligence agencies have given the FBI certain information or details that show Russian hackers were at least discussing the possibility of turning over Ms. Clinton's emails to Flynn through a cutout. This is that they have at least some chatter or evidence that they were going to work with Flynn through a cutout. We don't know that cutout is Mr. Smith. We don't know if that's someone else. But it does suggest that Flynn was at least tangentially involved, or at least had been considered someone that they could go through, right? And I will say that it's very interesting to me that Mr. Flynn appears to be cooperating with the Mueller investigation. And our sources have suggested sort of again and again that we're entering a new phase now where some of that cooperation will come to bear. That whatever he has been able to provide, if it hasn't come out already, that it will come out over the next several, you know, months. It's about time that what he knows will start showing up in either indictments, reporting, or actions by the Mueller team.
Anthony Cormier, thanks for joining us. Keep up the great work.
Thank you so much. Talk to you soon.
So I'm joined now by David Criss, who needs no introduction to Lawfare readers or Lawfare podcast listeners, to try to chew over how this story and the stories that it builds on may be playing inside, and the information that it contains may be playing inside the Mueller investigation, given that that investigation just issued an indictment against a bunch of Russian intelligence officers for hacking Democratic emails. So I've been puzzling over this much of the day, and I confess I'm kind of confused by it. On the one hand, they say that there is a conspiracy among Russian intelligence officers to hack emails and inject them into the campaign, the US campaign. And on the other hand, we have an operation that's with increasingly vividly described that looks like an American operation to access Russian intelligence, get emails, and inject them into the campaign, that even goes so far as to pay some money or to obtain some money for this. And yet I cannot say definitively that this is all part of the same conspiracy. And so, David, I'm interested, first of all, in your thoughts on how obvious is it that this has anything to do with the conspiracy that Mueller alleged?
Yeah, I think it's not obvious for exactly the reasons you said. We have bits and pieces here, and I can certainly construct a mosaic in my mind in which everything fits together, and there's a nice, neat master planning document somewhere in the Kremlin about the multi-pronged approach they're going to take to disrupt the American election cycle and undermine the democracies in the West more generally. I can also imagine no such document and a bunch of sort of weird satellite stuff orbiting a main effort, and it's coincidence or it's just people faking or, you know, imitators or whatever hanging on. It's just hard to sort out because we don't have full insight into it. I do think Bob Mueller probably has a much better view than we do into this.
And is that because he has access to Mike Flynn and we don't, or is it more, there more to it than that?
He's got access to Mike Flynn, which is, I think, the main thing, because this Smith prong of the conspiracy, if that's what it was, you know, looks like Flynn was the main point of contact. But Mueller also presumably has access to intelligence reporting, which he may or may not be allowed to use in any charging instrument. But Shane Harris's earlier reporting said that the intelligence community had information that the Russian government was trying to get the Hillary emails or at least some emails to Flynn via an intermediary. Maybe that was Smith, maybe that was someone else, but whatever information our intelligence community has scooped up, some or all of that is going to be available to Mueller, perhaps to use, but at least to know. And third, I'd like to know whether Bob has subpoenaed this guy whose name I'm going to have trouble pronouncing, but Smith's business partner, Suboxone, I've probably butchered that, apologies, who I think was on the call with Matt Tate and is probably at least witting of a good deal of what Smith was doing. So that's a third thing Mueller's got that we don't have. So he's got a lot of advantages due to, you know, the tremendous resources of the United States government and its investigative powers.
Right. So, all right, I want to walk through a few scenarios here. One is the true missed connections scenario, right, where we have a Russian conspiracy that wants to give emails to pro-Trump forces, and we've got an American conspiracy of pro-Trump forces that wants to receive emails from the Russians, but they actually, they're like, you know,
ships passing in the night,
like, you know, like it could be a romantic love song of
right,
things that didn't happen, right? They never meet.
And it would be like this weird Marx Brothers comedy of attempted conspiracy or collusion, I guess. Yeah, very, very strange if that's the state of affairs.
So my question is, if there's a Russian conspiracy to hack the election and to do as Mueller has alleged. And you are on this side of the Atlantic conspiring to do exactly that. And you're reaching out to people who you think are the Russians you believe must be those people doing that conspiracy over there. But you get the wrong guys, and you reach out to actually some shysters who take you for some money, and maybe they're not even Russians. Are you guilty of anything? I mean, are you like the would-be Al-Qaeda guys who conspire to provide material support, but actually you're only talking to FBI agents?
Yeah, well, so a couple of things. First, those guys go to prison. They because they bring an entrapment defense at trial and it gets rejected unless the Bureau screwed up the undercover. You know, law professors have tortured law students for years with hypotheticals about whether you can be guilty of attempted murder for shooting a corpse or for shooting, you know, someone who you think is in bed and it turns out it's a mannequin. Legal impossibility, factual impossibility, and many wonderful law school exams have addressed these topics. My sense is if he were alive and had done everything that's described here and perhaps a little more, it would not take an overly creative federal prosecutor to find a way to get after him. You know, I don't want to say definitively because there are some complexities and I haven't actually tried to line up the conduct with the statutes. But, you know, some criminals are not too bright. And I have to say the tradecraft here is not excellent. But I have a feeling there would be some hay that could be made by a federal prosecutor if he spent some time looking through the books.
Okay, so even in the true missed connection situation, that's, you know, attempted collusion with fake Russians about emails that don't exist.
I mean, look, I don't want to say absolutely, Ben, because I really haven't done the kind of homework that I would want to do before I, you know, approved an indictment or anything on this. But, I mean, the interesting thing about this Smith story as compared to, say, the Trump story is there is really no doubt whatsoever that Smith was trying to collude, if you like that word, with people he at least believed were Russians. He thought at least two out of the five people who were offering him emails were actual Russians, if you believe the reporting. And, you know, Shane is an excellent reporter, and Matt Tate, I'm sure, reported what happened with very high fidelity. So, you know, this is not in doubt that there was a U.S. person trying to get a thing of value from people he thought were foreign government intelligence personnel. And after Matt Tate, who, you know, himself is former British intelligence, had warned him that he was doing it. So it's knowing, it's willful, it's well-advised. And, you know, I think that we frown upon that sort of behavior as a society. And whether it's a campaign finance angle or whether it's just receipt of stolen goods or something more
conventional. Purchase of stolen goods.
Or Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. It just feels to me like a target-rich environment for an aggressive or creative federal prosecutor. Can't swear to it, but it feels like the kind of thing you could make some hay out of.
Okay, so that is actually, to me, a fascinating answer, because that's the most anodyne of my three scenarios, right? that's the one where both the emails are fake and the Russians are fake, right? The only thing that's not fake is the intent. So now let's talk about the situation in which there is some nexus, some interaction between these two conspiracies. And in the Lawfare post that we put together tonight, we speculated that the likeliest point of intersection is that Smith was after not the DNC or Podesta emails, but he was after the Hillary Clinton personal emails from the personal server that were deleted, and that in the GRU indictment, the Mueller alleges that on the day that Trump, you know, famously said to the Russians, "If you're listening, hope you'll get those emails for me," right? That was the first day they went after, tried to hack her personal office, and while it's not entirely clear that that means they were after these emails, it is possible that that's what it means. And you could imagine that that is a point of interaction between the Peter Smith story, a guy who launches a kind of American effort to get those emails. The president announces Russians, please hack those emails. The Russians then try to hack those emails, and he's trying to get them from him, from them. How much interaction does somebody need with the people who are doing the conspiracy alleged in the GRU indictment before those interactions themselves become part of the conspiracy? I mean, this is just a basic conspiracy law question.
You're literally killing me with these first-year criminal law questions. It's been an awfully long time. So I hope we get a serious lawyer in here to correct and revise the record. But look, I mean, conspiracy is an agreement to commit an unlawful act. And so it's a fact-intensive question in a way as to whether and to what extent there was an agreement between the folks. If two people are engaging in, you know, parallel play and they just happen to be pursuing the same kind of objective, but they don't agree with one another, they don't have to sign an agreement or anything, you know, but they have to have an agreement, whether it's oral or written or otherwise. If they're just engaged in parallel play and it's a coincidence because they both want the same thing and they're just racing towards the same objective, that's not a conspiracy. That's just sort of a, you know, two people next to each other. But if there's an agreement, if Smith is talking to Flynn saying, okay, Mike, I'm going to get you those emails and I'm going to be the conduit and the cutout and that'll keep it safe and we'll lawyer up the documents so they say that this was not in violation of campaign finance laws or, you know, whatever boilerplate the lawyer wanted on there, you know, that feels like an agreement. And if the underlying conduct is itself a problem, as I think it very well might be, then even if they are sort of avoiding the strict campaign finance violation from acting in concert in a way that would violate FEC regs, you might have enough for a conspiracy under conventional criminal law principles. That's my take on it. We should probably bring in a real law professor.
It sounds right to me. I mean, I think
that's comforting.
Well, not that. I mean, I'm further from a real conspiracy, from a real lawyer than you are. But
Ben, I've often thought that while you probably couldn't pass the property section of the bar exam, you could teach first year criminal law and national security law pretty effectively. So, you know, you got that going for you at least.
Well, I've certainly been involved in enough conspiracies to know one when I see one.
Okay, that's good. First-hand knowledge.
All right. So I want to talk about the gaps here, because if I were Bob Mueller and I were looking at this fact pattern, it seems to me there's three things that jump out at me as really missing holes that you would really need to close. One is, I want to know, was Peter Smith chasing dirt, or was this a real cache of emails that hackers had recovered?
Yep.
Second thing, whether the emails were real or not, were these real Russian hackers? Were these part of the Russian electoral interference operation or one of them, or were they, you know, shysters on the dark web who convince an old guy that they've got Hillary Clinton's emails, and this is a guy who's gone nuts about dirt on the Clintons since Troopergate, you know, right. So he's really amenable to being convinced in this area. And number three, is this Smith acting alone and trading on the names Michael Flynn and Steve Bannon, or is this Peter Smith actual stalking horse for the Trump campaign? I.e., is this the Trump campaign colluding over emails, or is this some guy colluding over emails?
Right, right. Well, I mean, I obviously, I haven't an answer to those questions. I will say it would not surprise me if some of the five people that Smith encountered and said he'd encountered were of the shyster variety, faking and just trying to steal his money. But it also would be possible that one or more of them are in some way connected to the Russians. And these things can go in layers through multiple kinds of cutouts, and maybe some of them are overlapping, and there are actually two people acting for the same principal three steps removed. Who knows? But it wouldn't surprise me if some of them were just trying to sucker him and steal his money. There's a considerable amount of evidence in what I was reviewing today from the historical reporting that he had connections to the campaign, at least through Flynn. There's some documentary evidence that's reported by Shane. There's Matt Tate's account of the phone call they had in which he was describing things like an insider. There's the document that he created right before the money started moving that lists Flynn and others. And I'm sure there was a considerable amount of puffery and, exaggeration that could have been involved there. But it did look like he had some connection. Again, Bob Mueller knows, presumably, because he's got Mike Flynn on team special counsel now.
It's like the Woody Allen, Marshall McLuhan thing. I happen to have Mike Flynn
right here.
Yeah.
You don't know everything. And usually in these kinds of things, when you're seeing stories like this or reporting like this, there's a good deal of noise mixed in with the signal. And surely, some of this is wrong or nonsense or fake. But it's, could be that the core of it is basically right. I presume we're going to find out. One thing is for certain in my mind, people have been saying, not just Rudy Giuliani, but like normal people have been saying that maybe Mueller is in a winding down phase. I'm just not seeing that. I haven't been seeing it. I think he is still turning the crank pretty aggressively here. And if this kind of financial data is still being obtained, if these bank subpoenas were recent, and it's a little hard for me to know that for sure, but if they are, then I would say we're not, coming to the end necessarily anytime soon, because this is a pretty, significant line of investigation that needs to be pursued. It's also interesting that the leak came out now. I mean, I don't know how this leaked. Mueller, I still believe Mueller runs a tight ship and that ship doesn't leak. But, if some other part of the government had access to this, you can ask yourself, why is it being leaked now? Is that because they're excited and they've run down the connection and there's, they're sort of previewing something big? Or is it because they came to the end of the thing and found there wasn't a connection, and so they're at least going to get some smoke out into the media for their efforts, even though there's no fire? We don't know, but if I had to bet, I'd bet the former.
Right. So one last question, and then I'll let you go. I'm interested in your observation that the fact that Mueller is investigating this is itself of interest, right? And it seems to me that one way to look at this is the most flamboyant, clearest attempt at collusion that there is. The only question is whether it's collusion with the Trump campaign or whether it's collusion with some hanger-on.
That's more or less how I see it based on what I read. Assuming what you read is right, it is overt, it is unashamed, it is knowing and willful efforts to collude with people that he himself describes as Russian governmental hackers. We just don't know whether he's connected to Trump, but we know he's a U.S. person actively working with people he thinks are Russian intelligence to get those emails.
So
very flamboyant.
So I'm going to throw a provocative idea out there and just tell me if it's provocative but bullshit or provocative but you think it's probably right. We're 2 years out of these events, and we're more than a year out of both the creation of the Mueller investigation and a little bit more than that of the disclosure of these events, Peter Smith's death, and then, Shane's reporting for the Journal, and then Matt's disclosure of his role in Lawfare. If this were a sideshow, total sideshow by a dead guy, it would not still be of active investigative interest by the special counsel's office with everything they've got on their plate.
Yeah, that sort of goes to the point that I was making before about like why the sort of looking at it from the perspective of why the leak now, and is it because something big is coming and somebody wants to get out ahead of that, or is it because there's no there there and they're at least going to get their moment of 15 minutes through leaking? I don't know. The Mueller folks, you know, it's a small team, only, what is it, 13 angry Democrats?
17 angry Democrats. They've hired a few more angry Democrats.
Yeah, so, but angry Democrats are not in short supply. They're a small group, relatively speaking. It's not that they're under-resourced, but they've got an awful lot on their plate. And I don't know how they're triaging the work, but I do think they are still going strong. And if this financial data is of recent vintage, if these bank subpoenas are really recent, I mean, you know, that may suggest that they deprioritized this, which is not to denigrate it, but just to sort of say maybe they were working on the GRU direct activity first. But I guess all I can say is I just don't think he's coming into the home stretch at this point based on what I'm seeing. And I think we should stay tuned for further developments. I think he's got more to show us.
We will leave it there. David, until he shows us more and we reconvene, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
The Lawfare Podcast is, as always, produced in cooperation with the Brookings Institution. Thanks this week to Anthony Cormier and David Chris for joining me remotely, and to Matthew Kahn and Michaela Fogel for audio engineering. We don't have music on the Lawfare Podcast special editions, but if we did, it would be performed by Sophia Yan. And the fact that we don't have music doesn't mean you shouldn't go and tweet the Lawfare Podcast, especially on special editions, because that's how a lot of people get to know us. So tweet us, share us on Facebook, be annoying about us at parties, and as always, thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to Amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's Amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.